and welcome to the Tech and Toast podcast. We simplify the way you buy and manage your hospitality tech. You can click through to techontoast.community where you can search our marketplace, attend our events, grab your free tech audit, and we will help you visualize your tech stack as you grow into 2024. Meanwhile, summer in Australia.
Hey, Louis, do you think we should sponsor the Tech on Toast podcast? I mean, I really like Chris, and I really like what it's all about.
Yeah, I think that's a ripper idea, LP. It's a perfect fit for what we do at Red Cat.
I mean, I agree. I'm just not sure how we get our message across around, like, Red Cat specializing in multi-site groups, you know, like cafe groups and fast casual groups and QSRs and all that.
Maybe we mention some of our customers like Nando's in Australia, New Zealand, the restaurants at the Aussie Open, Boost Juice International. I mean, they've got over 700 sites.
Hang on. I think that was the sponsors. This is the Tech on Toast podcast. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the next episode of the Tech and Toast podcast. And I'm delighted to be rejoined today by Joel Satchi, co-founder of Umenu Now. And welcome Vikram Badwa. Have I got that right?
You have, yep.
Thank you very much. Director of International Retail Technology for Starbucks. That's a mouthful.
It is.
That's not how you introduce yourself to people, is it?
I need to come up with an acronym.
Yeah, I'm trying to think there. No, that doesn't sound good when you do that. So we won't do that. But anyway, welcome back, Joel. How are you?
Very, very good. Thank you very much for having me. It's always good to be around you. You have this positive aura.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you. Apparently, I'm really loud, though, you were telling me today.
Yeah,
you're volume down, mate. So, how's life, Joel? What have you been up to?
I'm going skiing today. I'm very much looking forward to that.
Yeah, he has a huge case in the corner here. Me and Vic are a bit sad looking at him, where he's going, but yeah.
My kids kept me up all night, so I'm slightly delirious right now. So if I do say something a bit silly,
okay,
edit out.
That's why you were fiddling with the coffee app, wasn't it, this morning, trying to get yourself fueled up. And Vic, how are you? I mean, we've met LinkedIn, maybe a couple of video calls.
I've been following these podcasts for a while, so I'm delighted to be here. Really good. Busy with Starbucks, but and also helping Joel in my spare time. So it's great. It's great to be here.
Joel has an army of helpers.
He does.
I am very blessed to have you. Thank you very much.
So look, I suppose before we start, and I know you've been on before, we didn't have the cameras on you before, so now everyone can see your lovely face. Should we just talk about Umenu Now a little bit and just talk about where you're up to in that journey? Because it was brilliant last time I met you with Greg, but kind of bring us up to date.
Yeah. So Umenu has, what we do, three main things, and we have two principles. The three things we do is we help hospitality businesses boost sales, cut costs, and improve the customer experience. And the two principles that underpin that is, one is sustainability. You could fill Wembley Stadium multiple times over with the amount of waste the hospitality sector produces in the UK. We're talking about paper waste, food waste, advertising, point of sale, all of that. Umenu can really help reduce that waste and reuse your old hardware to deliver the solutions you need to really succeed. And the second one is service. We did some research recently, and we found out that around 80% of hospitality businesses are not happy with their tech providers. Around 50% of them are really not happy with their tech providers. And what was interesting about the research is that it's not that they want the best tech solution out there that integrates with everything and gives them the best thing ever. They just want someone that's going to help them out in their time of need. When you're six deep at the bar and things aren't working, they don't want to go on a chatbot or talk to someone in a different country who's going to talk you through some troubleshooting documents. They want someone to just say, yes, I've got you. Give me a second. Here you go. It's sorted. So as long as we can give really good service and promote sustainability whilst making people better businesses, helping them get better businesses, we're succeeding.
Yeah, it's interesting. Today, I was just saying to you guys at the table out there, I had a pub chain, very small, just two sites came to me this morning, but in their eyes, not small, obviously, came to me this morning talking about tech stack and talking about what they want to do. And it's interesting, Vic, isn't it, that micro issues that these guys are facing where they've got no integration or they were talking about, you know, getting payments from the table or orders from the table into the kitchen. From an enterprise level, I'm guessing it's still there, right, that problem, but it's a different fix. Is that right?
Yeah, look, I think everybody's struggling with similar problems.
Yeah.
I think what's interesting with sort of emerging players like Umenu Now that are disrupting the industry is that you've got these young, new players that are well-backed, that have got open APIs, that are really focusing on a core offering that they're good at, their USP ultimately,
yeah,
versus the big incumbents that, you know, try to do everything and none of it that well. And they didn't play well with other partners too. So you end up in this kind of chicken and egg situation where you've got, you know, you're paying a lot of money for some tech. It's very difficult to integrate because it's a closed ecosystem with a third party. Versus now, you know, you can You know, if we look at restaurant management systems as an example, you can get a best-in-breed demand management system talking to a like small agile labor management solution and an inventory management solution, rather than going like an all singing, all dancing fourth or something like that that you would have historically needed to look at. So I think it's a great time to be a tech player in the hospitality space, because I think there's a lot of interesting things happening, but there's a lot of tech debt that needs to be unpacked.
It's a great phrase.
Like your two pub chain that you talked about, and it's unpacking that that's the complex thing that everybody's struggling with.
Yeah, and I think, and Joel, one of the things we were going to talk about is the eco-pilot, right? Which is the, I suppose, your version of helping fix that problem.
Yeah. I mean, Vikram's been instrumental in this. You know, we started off with eMenu, so helping businesses access really beautiful digital menus that upsells based on the time of day, day of week, you know, have allergen filters and all that smart stuff, and providing that to everybody, right? It doesn't matter what point of sale you have. You have a 20-year-old point of sale, you can still access that great tool. But that's just helping the customer. How about the staff? The staff still are using this 20-year-old tech that's just not providing that customer journey that most customers want. They still want to talk to a human being and be served and have the simple stuff, be sat down, explain the menu, ask them, look, I've got this allergy, can you tell me what I can and can't eat? What goes well with this dish? What wine would you recommend? All of those things aren't being done generally very well. So we developed EcoPilot to solve that. It is a co-pilot for your staff, and is helping staff provide that customer journey. So, you know, it's the ability to use, again, same sort of principles as eMenu. You can use any device, be it a phone or a tablet, anything connected to the internet, to take orders and payments and upsell. So imagine you walk around in a restaurant, someone says, hey, can I get an X? No worries. Oh, and it prompts you, well, with that, this goes really well. So it's promoting the right thing at the right time for your staff. So imagine you had a member of staff that was new to the business and didn't know the menu well enough. You
just every day. Profile. Yeah.
that's very common in the industry. It ends up being a really nice training tool. You know, that member of staff feels comfortable going around, explaining the menu, upselling. And we've got some really smart things we're doing there to incentivize that upselling. So, you know, there are competitions within this. So if you sell the most X, you'll get Y. So as a member of staff, you gamify the experience. It becomes quite interesting, you know, and also makes that whole environment an environment you want to be around, because it's fun.
It is really interesting, because you have to get to a point in tech where you are servicing both parties equally. Yeah. You know, so obviously always the user experience is key, and that intuitiveness. Most people eating out now have grown up with an iPhone or in their hand or something, so they've been able to understand that journey. But equally, the staff have to be looked after. I listened this morning to a lady who had an allergen in Grind, and this isn't Grind's fault, but they had to go and call a manager to explain the process around allergens, because they're making sure they're doing it right? I get it totally. But that's like a 4-minute wait, you know, and he's, bless him, is probably doing something else somewhere else, and he's getting dragged down here to have that conversation. So it's really interesting that we're still really not addressing those issues, because that's time we're losing, right, in terms of efficiencies and everything else. And I'm sure, Vic, that when you look at this, I mean, because everybody can access tech now, right? That's why Vic said it was exciting. He's right, isn't it? Because it's so accessible, and it's so good what we can do with tech now. The problem is that that's almost opened the gates, right? That there's a lot of people doing it. How do you kind of manage that, Vic? How does it become accessible but still revolutionize what we're trying to do?
Yeah, look, I think allergens is a great example.
Yeah.
And everybody's, you know, post Natasha's law, everybody's really trying to focus in on that. So we've got something where we've got a dynamic nutritional allergen calculator that will tell you exactly what is in what you've customized, with the hundreds of thousands of different possibilities that you can build a drink. And I think everybody is trying to tackle the same problems. I do think there's an opportunity for the industry to come together more, because there's a lot of kind of independent, everybody's trying to hold on to their little secret thing, and we're all trying to save the same problem. So there's so much waste in doing that. But yeah, like, you know, there are a number of players, especially, you know, at startup level, that are really challenging. And actually, by the big players, you know, the big enterprise players, having an ecosystem where you can have both small and large vendors, I think you get the best of both worlds. You get the ability to scale, but also innovate on the edges, you know, is you know, what we're doing at Starbucks, but also historically at KFC and McDonald's. It gives you the ability to truly, at an enterprise level, move into new markets, but also test and learn and innovate using smaller players around the edges. You know, and I think that's the way that an enterprise scale with kind of tackling this.
Yeah, I think that's right, Joel. Because you, I think you said to me before, who's looking after the little guys, right? I think it's totally right because the hospitality is vast. Think of all the different verticals: competitive socializing, pubs, bars, hotels, restaurants, and not everybody can have everybody. but that's the space you're trying to fill, right? Really trying to help these guys kind of get over the fact that they might have tech debt is my new favorite phrase, Vicky, which I've stolen forever. But to get over that tech debt and kind of maintain and be able to function still, access enterprise level tech, but in a SME scale.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it is for everyone. I mean, 80% of the hospitality sector are small businesses. And you know, the first client actually on the EcoPilot product is a train company. And in the solutions they had were very, very old. And now, you know, that a member of staff can walk down the train and, you know, take orders and payments on the same device and have that go straight to the kitchen or the cafe where there's a kitchen display screen. It's just a web browser. It can be accessed on a phone or a tablet. It's made and it's delivered to the seat. It's so simple and it's accessible. It's not expensive. It plugs into anything. So you can take this around the world. Anyone can run their business on a solution like EcoPilot. So I'm really happy to be supporting the businesses that are not really well supported in today's environment.
Yeah, I find transport very interesting in tech. I think transport has been unattended, and trains particularly in the UK. I don't know what it's like in the rest of the world, but trains in the UK particularly, the level of accessibility to tech or how we could function, how we do in a venue like today is totally different. And Vic, the integration and cost is expensive, right? Depending on what you're doing, as you mentioned, you're a big partner, small partner. Is there a way around that now? Are working with these smaller guys enabling you to do more with less, if that makes sense?
Yeah, look, I think standardized connectors, standardized APIs, and actually vendors really creating a win-win partner ecosystem, I think is happening more and more.
Yeah.
And that does enable smaller and bigger operators to come to the table and stitch these best-of-breed solutions together in a way that where the tech just works, right? And that's always been, you know, big enterprise brands like Starbucks have large tech teams that can support this stuff, but the small players don't. And actually, you know, making it so that systems can talk, you know, can talk to each other, I think we're now at a stage where that has really matured, and there's a there's a good suite of offerings out there that, you know, ultimately can start to face into some of these challenges that we're talking about, where we really are facilitating like the crew experience and the customer experience and thinking about both angles, rather than just, you know, because you can't replace old school hospitality, right? And that's the one challenge. It's like in COVID, everybody thought we were going to pivot to 100% digital ordering, and that hasn't quite happened. People still want to walk up to the front counter and talk to somebody and interact, and that's the nature of the business, right?
Yeah, and I think, and it's frustrating, right? Because the QR code made its comeback, a bit like Madonna, you know, came back in the pandemic. Everyone thought, wow, it's back. This is great. But and then when you try and go and order sometimes one of these things, you're disappointed, right? And me and Joel went through this, not here today, but we were somewhere else today. And we went through this process of ordering. And it was just like, wow, I don't want to give you my life story. I don't want to spend 7 minutes ordering when I can literally go to the bar, which is right behind me, and do it there. So it's still not perfect, is it? And I'm sure it's a long road, but I think there's a lot more options out there. And I think that's where you fit in, right? You're trying to sit in that part and say, look, we can do this quick, nimble, on old tech and get you through the process and not have to worry about sending you mad, as Joel was this morning. Yeah. I don't know if that's a habit of yours, Joel, everywhere you go, testing.
I will make sure I get the order through.
Yeah.
it was a challenging experience, but it's also good to see that, look, these solutions are everywhere, and there's loads of room for improvement, which is, you'd think a couple of years down the line, everyone has a great solution. It's not the case.
No.
It's still on version 1 or version 2.
It really is, but 10 now. The opportunity is huge. I think that's the main thing, isn't it? The opportunity is huge. And what's really interesting about you guys, and I've got a call this afternoon with talking about the Guinness stores for a customer. We're putting some guest experience tech in there. And you guys have done something quite different, haven't you? Got a collaboration with a major supplier, drink supplier, to enable you to reach more people, actually. But actually, again, you're fixing a problem. Tell us more about it, because it is really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there's two angles here. One is around sustainability, and the other is around accessibility for this sort of tech, for the mass market, right? Because it can be too expensive. It's just too much friction. No one likes any change. And no one wants to spend any money today. So, you know, you want everything for nothing, right? How can you do it? Well, we found a way to do it. Big food and drinks brands want you to buy more of their product. They can do that today on Google, on Amazon. It can say, hey, Coca-Cola, for example, right?
Yep.
If you type in Coke, Coca-Cola will be the first thing that pops up on Google. If you type in Coke in Amazon, he's going to get a big Coke banner with videos and all that sort of stuff. It's going to make you want to buy Coke. You can't really do that in hospitality, and not well, and not scalably. If you think about what big food and beverage brands do today, they go and they train members of staff saying, hey, look, you should upsell this gin, and this is what you can do with the cocktails. You know, please put our point-of-sale materials on these tables explaining all the new innovation brands we've got. Please put this massive banner outside explaining X, Y, and Z. I mean, most of this stuff goes straight in the bin, and staff move on, and they just forget about all these upsells. So, you know, there's millions and millions of pounds being wasted by big food and beverage brands, where they cannot get people to purchase their brands. So with eMenu, we've partnered with some big brands to promote their products, which are already in the venue, ahead of others, increasing sales, and subsidize the cost of eMenu for customers. And we did a trial in December and in January with multiple sites. And for one gin brand, the brand that was being promoted, the unit sales for those went up 158% versus the same time last year, and it was just digital promotions. So, you know, this thing works. So I think we may be one of the first to do it with such a big brand, and I think we'll see more of this in the future.
Definitely after this goes up. But it's like, I mean, someone once said to me, Vic, it's like a billboard in your hand, right? Having that digital weapon, as it would be, in your hand, like you've got that ability to do that right for people and to do that for partners. Is it something? I mean, it's because I know you're working with Joel on this, but do you think that's a scalable thing? Do you think people will follow?
Yeah, look, I think going back to the point about nobody wants to spend any money, right? You know, the UK is technically in a recession at the moment. People are going out, eating less, drinking less. You know, and so when I think about like the franchisee or even an individual operator, the cost of tech is just mounting, right? There's some analysis done by Gartner over the course of the last 2 years that shows like the increase in tech spend for retailers, and the industry sort of the industry is tracking higher than other industries, and that's because of all the disruption that's happening, right? And so I think we ultimately have to work out how we make this more sustainable going forward, and I love the idea of subsidizing some of the costs around it. You know, the value, a lot of brands don't truly appreciate the value of the data that's being captured, as well as the upsell opportunity around, you know, marketing, right? But the value of the customer data, preferences, what sells what with what, you know, I think it's incredibly valuable and can be monetized to help ultimately make everything cheaper, so that the whole thing becomes more sustainable.
And as you end up with that single customer view, right? So you end up that data that you're gathering from drinks ordering or food ordering, whatever it might be, you end up with that single customer view, which is what the power of what you're talking about, where you can literally say, Chris visited the Plow in Harborne in Birmingham and drank this and ate that, and comes in regularly, weirdly, on a Wednesday, right? So then you start understanding, oh, that must be his day where he worked, you know. So it becomes so powerful in terms of what you can do after that with people. And is that data then very accessible to your end user?
Yeah, so it depends on, when you say end user, do you mean the brand or the restaurant?
Yeah, the restaurant.
Or both. I think we can talk about data now, I guess. You know, the fact is that there's just a lot of data right now available to hospitality businesses. I think the stats is around 50% of hospitality businesses don't use their data
for sure
at all, and they struggle mainly because it's complex, right? They're not data scientists, right? They're not tech businesses; they're hospitality businesses. But you've got all this data. How do you turn that into insights? And you know, when you're struggling to do the basics, you know, the data is normally secondary. So, you know, we think there are two ways that we generally help. One is we can help you monetize that data first. So do nothing with it. Let's get someone to pay for that data and then subsidize some of your services, or if not, make it a revenue generation tool for you. Multiple businesses will want access to that data to know, oh, my brand is actually fourth on the gin list in terms of profit, in terms of sales. How do I get that to number one? I will pay you to get it to number one. I'll sponsor your digital menu. I'll sponsor your point of sale. I'll run competitions on your point of sale.
Yeah, I'll put product in the venue. Yeah, whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah. And weirdly, I was talking to Brandon from JKS, who's the head of projects there, JKS Restaurants, and he was talking about the infrastructure and the setup of head offices of these mid-chains, and that actually we've got the wrong roles in these head offices, that we, from what you're talking about, Vic, about the change and, you know, the disruption that's going on in terms of tech, that actually, and for data analysis and for change management and all that kind of stuff, is there a position where we should be looking at a slightly different look of a hospitality company in terms of the way they manage everything, the output that's coming out? Now, it's a bit radical, I know. Everyone wants an area manager, everyone wants a CFO and all that kind of stuff. But I genuinely believe that those roles will exist in the next, well, should now, to manage data, manage, because in an enterprise level, I'm guessing you have people, right, that look after that stuff, that make sure that that's happening.
Yeah, I have a peer that is responsible for data and orchestration.
Right.
And a team has a dedicated team. And then within the US, we have a team of data scientists that are building out models for recommendations, but looking at rewards data and targeted marketing. There is so much value in all of this, right? But that's, you know, Starbucks is a big enterprise brand, as is Yum, as is McDonald's, and not, you know, your chain of two pubs can't afford to make that happen. So how do you ultimately give them insight, you know, in their hands so that they can action? And that's the kind of, you know, I think that's what's really interesting about this. At an enterprise level, the big brands are going to want to keep hold of this data. It's a point of differentiation versus at a smaller scale, there's less you can do with it at the moment.
Right? Yeah.
And that's where I think eMenu now actually can really provide some value. But I think you're right. You know, ultimately, even the medium-sized businesses really need to start thinking about data analysis. How does that, you know, data-led decisions, how does all of this really shape how you operate?
Because you could argue, potentially, that having a data analyst in your head office could replace or redeploy labor from the front line because you know where the sales are going or you know where you need to be. And I think that's really interesting, looking at it from a helicopter view, going, actually, we know that Tuesdays or whatever, all through the year, we've got too many people hanging around doing not a lot. But we know that on Wednesday, Thursdays, actually, due to our data analyst who's paid X amount a year, has told us that we need to do this. And that value is huge, right? Because there's a lot. I think you talked about Wembley Stadium being full of wasted stuff from hospitality. I totally agree. I think that's from my gut, you know, and I have spent years working off my gut in hospitality. And I think it's really interesting now that finally we have a picture painted of what we're doing through products like yours, where we can see what's happening, but we need to act on it. You know, we need to enact it. And I think it's exciting. You mentioned insight at the start, actually, Joel, around tech adoption, tech usage. And I suppose we've talked about a little bit, actually, about how you're kind of counteracting that and how you're helping improve some of those problems. But some of those stats were huge, right? About, was it 50% you said weren't entirely happy with their POS provider?
Yeah, so 80% are not very happy. 50% are really not happy.
Right,
okay. So it's almost...
The other one just didn't bother. They were so angry, right?
So they just want better support. They just want simpler, accessible tools. And if you can get it for free, fantastic.
And do you think the dominance of the big guys, right? So like, and they know who they are. Yeah. So we're not going to name them, but like the biggest suppliers in your space, I suppose. Do you think that's going... I mean, I personally, from the marketplace, see it being challenged because of the amount of people that come into me with new solutions and what they're doing and very lightweight, nimble tech, agile tech. Do you think that's going to challenge? I mean, to both of you this, actually. Do you think that's going to challenge over the next couple of years?
I can give you an example from Friday, actually. I went to pitch to a nightclub, and the person leaving was someone with a startup point-of-sale system. And the point-of-sale they had in place had been there for about 10 years. And I asked them, why are you considering this business that had just started?
Yeah.
They said, because it's all new tech. It's all stuff that I've not seen before, and I'm talking directly to the founder. But you could also go to X, Y, and Z company that have been here for 15 years and are best in class. That, you know, there's some great companies out there, and it's like, no, I want to talk to someone. I want to have that personal experience. And the fact that it's just so nimble means that I'm ready to get rid of... I have tons of screens. It's a huge nightclub. But they're going to go for this tiny startup business. I think that this disruption is happening. I'm seeing it at the smaller end. How about at the bigger end?
Yeah, look, I think it definitely is happening. I think the smaller players that can be, that will do anything to win the business, that don't have like this legacy technology that they're kind of that is holding them back, which a lot of the big players have, means that ultimately they can be much more agile, to your point, right? And I do think that is, you know, you look at Square that entered the market, that can ship a POS in a box and you can self-serve and configure it yourself and you're up and running in a day, how do, you know, one of the bigger players, you know, you're talking about a significant financial expense to get the thing set up and then running. And so I think, you know, ultimately everybody's going to try to pivot into this more agile, leaner way of working.
I've got a friend who runs a dark kitchen in Cardiff. He's got about 14 brands that go out. He does really well. He does about 50 grand a week, you know, from nothing, you know, and he has an events business as well now. So he's doing summer events with his little, he has a truck he's invested in. He's out. So he's really killing it. And he's off to Ireland to do a franchise. But, and I asked him the other day about POS, because I was saying to him, oh, look, you're still on, I think he's on Zettle. Oh, he's on, yeah. And I said, you're going to change? He went, no. Yeah. I said, why not? He said, I don't need to. It's perfect for what I do. He said, and it was just really, and I said, oh, but you can have this. And I was showing him all my wares from the marketplace, going, you can have anything. Because I'm just interested to get his feedback all the time. And he's like, I just don't need to. I said, I don't have time to invest in a big piece of kit coming into my business that is going to probably distract me and probably deliver the same thing they've already got. And he said, and I'm just happy with the level of reporting I got. I'm happy with the functionality, and that's it. It's just, I find it absolutely, I find it really interesting talking to these people on the ground who think totally different to the people selling in. Yes. Because as you said before, they're not, the feeling that everyone wants everything perfectly integrated, it's actually not true. Yes, they don't want things, they don't look at it as integrated. They look at it as operations working properly. So it's a very different mindset. And they approach it from like, when it's a problem, it's a problem. I changed POS in one of my old companies on the one day. Someone rang me on the day that it broke, that something happened that really peed me off. And I went into an RFP because of that day. That's how emotional I was.
So it's the service. Right?
Yeah.
If you had better service.
Yeah, it was about... I won't even tell you it was, but it was shocking. But POS particularly is interesting, right? And the future of POS and where it might get to. And I think we were kind of alluding to it a little bit already as we're talking about being nimble and agile. Where do we think we're going to have a world where there is no mother till and there is no, there is no kind of physical? Because we used to build restaurants based on POS in Carluccio's. We would design and build them based on this till has to be here, the mother till was there, this is the station for the kids to stand up and queue up and put their orders in, you know? And that's physically how we built restaurants. So, what do you think about the future of POS?
The mother till, that's a new term.
Have you never heard that? Maybe that's an operator term.
I've never heard of where is the mother till?
Really?
It's like POS 1.
I'll show you where the mother till
is. POS 1, like the mother till. Okay, yeah. So, look, I think it's really interesting, right? I think, you know, especially in the QSR space, within fast food, everybody is sort of pushing to try and be 100% digital. They're pushing you to the app, they're pushing you to progressive web, or they're pushing you to kiosk. Even in drive-through, there's a load of interesting stuff happening with voice AI to automate order taking. And so POS is losing relevance. I think that's undeniable. But then within premium concepts, you still have this rub where people expect to be served by somebody.
Yeah.
Right? And so I think that's where Copilot's actually a really interesting solution, because it sort of blends both and you still get that human interaction and you're supporting the partner journey as well. So I do think POS will have a place. Personally, I think what we're going to see happening is the bigger players will pivot into three areas, actually. One's around this whole space around aggregators of aggregators, like the likes of Deliverect, where you're paying a fee to plug in third-party orders to your legacy POS. I think the big incumbents will just do build out direct connections and capture.
Well, it's already happening, right?
Yeah,
a lot of them are already trying to do that or doing that.
And capture that value, ultimately. And then actually, you know, I think the one thing that is an extension of POS that actually is incredibly important is kitchen production. And so, you know, it's always been like thought about as like just a kind of add-on. But actually, I think the production engine, you know, whether it's labeling, kitchen screens, you know, the sequencing of orders, you know, now that we're moving to a increasingly digital world with all of these orders coming from your app, delivery aggregators, the way in which that's produced, tracked, exposed to the outside world through events is becoming increasingly important and actually a point of differentiation, in my opinion. So I think actually that's a space where there are some dedicated players out in the industry like QSR Automations that do kitchen management, but I think actually, and then you've got the likes of Deliverect helping with the order aggregation and the connection back up to delivery, I think the POS vendor is going to lean more heavily into that. And then a place that's relatively, you know, easy for them to also step into is payment, right? And then, you know, because you ultimately can get a percentage of each of the transactions, and it's an easy way to make money, right?
Yeah, it really is. And as we're seeing it now, is a race, right, to the I don't want to say the bottom, but there's definitely a race, right? Because we don't have to mention them again, but there's three or four incumbents I can think of who are doing that, who've switched that, and customers are almost beholden to, you know, if they're already with the POS, they're kind of taking the payment and on we go, and you know, and there's good arguments to do that, right? Again, it cuts out part of your stack, it cuts out another person you're talking about, but I really want to create some content around the payment structure of a payment in hospitality. I'm going to do it. Where you have your fee and then you have all these hidden fees that sit behind it, where smaller mid-sized operators don't know what they're paying. They think they know. But I did an exercise with Prime Minister, with my CFO, and we spent the summer, and it was the summer because we didn't sell any pies in the summer, looking at our payment structure and what we paid to WorldPay at the time. And we just had so many hidden, you know, you've got rentals for machines, you've got the actual percentage of the commission, you've got paying for someone to have seven managers in an office in Southwark. You've got there's a lot of hidden costs there. And actually, it's a really aggressive part of your strategy to go and look at your payment provider and look at what you're paying, because I think there's a real win there if you can get it right and find that. And also in terms of connectivity and what you're doing and all the other bits. But yeah, it's interesting. I'm working a lot with Dojo and those kind of guys at the moment, just seeing that market seems to be getting really competitive, which is exciting, because normally that brings, hopefully, better tech, better opportunity for the operators. What do you think, Joel? Obviously, you're going to say a co-pilot is the future of POS, Chris. just say it. Because you're already on this mission. I think you already had this in your mind. I've known you for 3 or 4 years now. You were kind of thinking this a long time ago.
There's just so much going on in the POS space. Personally, when I pitch to customers, they want more and more and more. So we grow with them, and I can see why you've got these behemoths of POSs, because I'm assuming they've gone through that journey over the last 20 years. Like, oh, can you add this on? Can you add the kitchen display? Can you add detail stock manager? Can you add this, this, and this? And then what is the definition of a POS? Is it all of those things, or is it some of those things? So now we're going through that journey where we're trying to figure out what is the minimum product that most businesses want and really need.
Yeah.
And part of that is around, you know, kitchen displays, the ability to take orders and payments, and do that without the complexities, as you mentioned, with WorldPay. They're one of our partners, and a good company to work with. One of the benefits of working with a company like WorldPay is because they'll also promote your business.
Yep.
We work with eMenu now, and then they'll, you know, this lead generation and all that sort of stuff. But naturally, that payment journey is quite complex. But if you can simplify that and say, actually, you don't need to have 5 card terminals that you're paying 20 quid a month for, and all this sort of stuff, and it breaks and it falls out of your pocket. But actually, you can use any device to take a payment. That completely changes it, and it simplifies the costs as well. So I think the future of POS, in my view, is just simplifying everything and breaking down the barriers of understanding. What are you actually going to get out of this?
We mentioned data briefly, and I just wanted to come back to that really about, because what you're getting from eMenu now, if I understand rightly, is transactional data, where you were talking about before about, you know, the fact you can see what's going on with the alcohol suppliers, you can see what's going on with food ordering, and that transactional information is, I suppose, the oxygen now for operators, or if they use it.
If they use it, yeah. So for us, the two things, one, we can monetize it, which is great, and then the second thing is we help our operators, like you mentioned, you know, most operators don't have head office with someone data analyst helping them. So we'd help them say, okay, look, these are the things you should potentially be selling on your eMenu, it's our service. Of course, we want people to use it more. On your EcoPilot, these are the things that you should be promoting at these certain times. So that insight from suppliers like us is so valuable to small to medium-sized businesses.
And how do you deliver it? Or is it part of the, literally they've got a report they can pull off?
For us, again, because it's all about the service, we have very regular check-ins with the key stakeholders in all of our businesses. And as part of that, it's, okay, should we go through your sales? Should we go through what was the best-selling, the worst-selling, and what could you do different for the next period until our next check-in? And we help them structure their menu. It's something that's helped us. It's worth the investment for me as a business, because it helps with the retention of those customers. Because even if, you know, they'll tell you if they're not happy in those meetings. Otherwise, they just won't tell you.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Yeah, it's always a problem when they're quiet, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's true. Like me with my POS that day. The only day it was only a problem on that day, and that's the day that I made a decision. So it's really and then back over to the, I suppose, looking at the enterprise level for data, and we talked about data analysts and all this kind of stuff, but actually the real value of this data, is it just through transactional, or is it also understanding where they're spending? I suppose it transactional covers where they're spending, what they're spending. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. But it's also, can you start to force, not necessarily force, but can you start to encourage customers to come in at times when they're not coming in?
Yes.
Right? So starting to look across your customer base, identify patterns, and then work out, okay, you know, and starting to categorize your customers into groupings and then target, I think there is immense value in that, right? So whether that's targeted promotions, and this then is where you get to the next stage of it's not just transactional data, it's now we have a way of identifying you as a customer, and that doesn't necessarily mean that we need any of your personal data, but it's the type of customer you are, and you like a particular drink, and you like a particular food item, and you come in on these days, but people like you also by things like this. And now we can get very specific about how we email market to you or market to you through the app or, you know, and actually that does drive repeat visits. And I think that's where there's a lot of value, right? So when you start to think about how you can ladder in a rewards journey and the wealth of data that you have on that individual to make their experience better, one, I think you build affinity to the brand, but also the ability, you know, to drive up transaction value or repeat visits.
Yeah, and that loyalty piece, and we the other day we did a bit of analysis on what people were typing into the front end of the website on Tech on Toast, and loyalty has gone from, I think, number 9 in terms of ranking up to number 3 over the past 3 months, and it just shows that, which tells you we're in a recession also, in a really weird way, because it actually says that they're trying to hold, it's the golden goose is keeping that customer, right? Very hard, very easy to lose one, very hard to gain one. And I think that loyalty piece is becoming more and more important, and I think it's fractured around the customer journey. So I think that if you have drive-through, it might work great there, but it might not work great on-premise or off-premise or whatever it might be. And I think, and we were talking about friend in tech before who do that really well in terms of that whole omni-channel view. And I think loyalty, is it something, do you plug into some of loyalty or do you also help with that?
Yeah, well, there are companies we plug into and we have a very simple loyalty program.
Right.
Now, loyalty isn't necessarily an app. It's someone feel comfortable coming back to your brand, right?
That's exactly that. You've been listening to the podcast, my friend. No, that's Rock of 40 Hotels run the other week. And he said exactly the same. He said, loyalty, you can't fix it by buying something off the shelf. You've got to have loyalty to be able to encourage it. And the enablement of the tech will do that.
Exactly. So we focus on the simple stuff. Make sure you have a really good service and your customers have a great experience. They will naturally become loyal and you can reward them for that. And they don't need anything fancy with loads of points that you can claim X from. It's just a little thank you. And that's what it is. You don't have to go down the whole crazy discounting world, which will damage your brand. You just say thank you to the customers that want to come and see you.
Love that. And look, I mean, we're going to run out of time, as you always we do on this bloody thing. But what about the future? I mean, you're sitting in a chair over there, Vic, and you've obviously come from huge brands over the years, and you're still in a huge brand. What does it look like, I suppose? You were showing us some stuff. We won't talk about it, because I'm sure you're not allowed. But we were looking at some stuff on your laptop before you come in, talking about some exciting stuff you're working on. Where is there an end point, or is this going to keep iterating, keep changing in terms of, I suppose, in terms of EPOS and in terms of other tech we can get our hands on?
Look, yes, I think it is going to continue to iterate. We were talking about order at table before and how there's so much opportunity in that space. We're on version 1 or version 2. Where's that going to go to? Progressive web. So I think ultimately for me, it's about giving customers choice. If you want to transact with a brand in any way that they want to transact with a brand. So if you want to use an app or you want to use web or you want to go to a kiosk or you want to talk to somebody, how can you facilitate all of those occasions and do them well? And at the same time, from a partner perspective, and this is something that we're really thinking about, because you know your crew sentiment and ensuring that your brand is a better place to work than the restaurant next door is so important, because it's just becoming so competitive, one, to hire, but also to retain talent.
Yeah.
And that's an area where we're really doubling down. So part of that's in the ordering space, but also production, but also all of the back of house stuff. Like, how do you schedule labor? Are you fairly allocating labor? Do you enable staff to swap shifts and all of that kind of stuff and give them that level of flexibility? The tip sharing stuff that's, and I know we talked about tip jar before, but there are a lot of great solutions out there, but ultimately really just thinking through, give the consumer choice and reward loyalty, but also enable your crew to give the best experience that they can and become loyal to your brand. And I think tech can help make crew members' lives easier. And we have just, especially in response to COVID, we just laddered in a lot of complexity through tech into stores. And we're now having to go back and clean that up. because it's just become an increasingly difficult place to work and operate.
Yeah, and I was talking to a lovely man called Nico, who runs, who's the COO at Paris Baguette, and we were talking, and he has something called a tech deck, and it's the first time I've seen something like that. I'm sure people have it digitally in bigger companies, but it was great. It's basically a little folder, and he has all his different tech partners in there, and everybody who onboards into the business, team member, gets to go through the tech deck, so you can have that in replace of tech debt. I'll give you that one.
Tech
deck. But that just shows, right? I know it's a very manual example. It just shows where the industry's going. It shows that actually on the front foot, if you're going to be a good employer and you're very aware that those chefs that worked next door 6 months ago, they expected the same level of tech that they got in their last business, right? And they'll be able to kind of, because I totally agree. I think retention will be based a lot around how easy their job is or how hard we're making it. But eMenu now is built on doing that, right? That's why you built it, to make these people's lives easier.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're talking about small companies really improving the experience for not just customers, but also staff, and improving that loyalty. And there's some great small businesses that I work with. I think you brought Amble here before.
Yeah.
And Yuda. You know, they're great businesses that are bringing new customers in and helping staff onboard faster. And then you have eMenu helping with that whole guest experience. I mean, it's really exciting for an hospitality business to be going out there, going on Tech on Toast, going on the marketplace, and seeing all these great solutions that are now becoming more and more affordable because things like supplier sponsorship and all that, and having you as the guru to go to say,
I'll take guru. I'll have that today. It's Thursday. Guru's going in my back pocket. But that's no. And I also think, and the reason I built it was to do with operations. That's my background. And obviously, I'm not as technical as either of you guys. What is really interesting is the way that operations is being now represented or thought of. I'm sure it always was, but I think the more we can expose that, the more we can talk about the issues they're going through, and the more we can talk about the capability of tech to fix those problems, it becomes much more interesting. Look, I love chatting to you. It's very nice to have you on, Vic. We've been LinkedIn friends for a while. So if people want to get hold of eMenu now and talk about EcoPilot, how do I say EcoPilot or EcoPilot? It almost sounds like you're an eco-warrior. but how do people get hold of you, Joel?
Please just go on our website and go on the Contact Us form. If you're a hospitality business that wants to improve sales, cut costs, and improve the customer experience, let's have a chat. If you're a supplier that wants to get in front of your customers and promote your brand, let's get in touch as well.
Perfect, lovely. And they're also eMenu now, obviously, on the marketplace, so you can go on there and find them, and you'll be able to find this podcast on there. And Vic, if people listen to your dulcet tones and they think, oh, I'd like to chat to that clever man, can they get hold of you? What's the best way to send people to you?
Search for me on LinkedIn.
Yes.
We connect through that.
It's always a safe way.
It's always a safe way.
Email is not good. Someone gave out their mobile once. I thought that was brave. But yeah, I think about, did you give out your mobile, Joel, first time
Maybe.
Around?
Maybe, I was very keen.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah. Couple of desperate people ringing him up, but yeah, it's great. Anyway, look, thanks very much. That was the Tech on Toast podcast. You've listened to eMenu now, and we'll see you all soon.
Thank you.
Cheers. Thanks.